hundreds of Muslim Brotherhood supporters stormed a government building in Cairo and set it on fire earlier today. That's according to Egypt state media. They're also staging marches in Cairo and Alexandria. This comes a day after a bloody crackdown on supporters of deposed President Mohamed Morsi that left more than 500 dead and 3,700 people injured. The violence began when security forces used bulldozers, tear gas, and gunfire in an early morning assault to clear two pro-Morsi encampments in Cairo, sparking violent reactions in other cities. The Interior Ministry said the dead included 43 members of the police forces. It was the deadliest day in Egypt since the 2011 uprising that toppled longtime ruler Hosni Mubarak. Joining us now to discuss these events and what they mean for Egypt's future is USD political science professor Tim Shorn. He teaches Middle East politics and is director of the International Studies Program. Tim, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thank you for having me back. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we last spoke it was about a week after President Morsi was deposed and an interim government was set up by General Sisi and the Egyptian military. And at that time, you were concerned about violence erupting. Were you shocked at all by the scale of yesterday's crackdown?
I was a little surprised by the intensity and how quickly it came, considering the government was giving slightly different indications earlier on that perhaps they would begin with kind of imposing a stranglehold, if you will, on the camps and stopping food and other supplies and other supporters from getting in. So I thought that this might be a little bit more drawn out than yesterday showed us. But I think looking back, even by day two or three of the coup, we should have known that something like this would be inevitable if the protesters didn't go home. Clearly, General Sisi and his government, the president, the prime minister, had this in their hip pocket in case the protesters didn't leave. So I'm not surprised the crackdown occurred. I am surprised by the intensity by which it was carried out yesterday morning.
And why was it so intense? Why was it so intense and quick?
That's a good question. I think part of it was perhaps that the military didn't want to engage in half measures, thus allowing the international community to ratchet up pressure or to allow the Muslim Brotherhood to reorganize and to prepare other means for confronting the government. So I think it was essentially kind of a Texas Hold'em all-in sort of thing where they decided, all right, the protest, the encampments have to be stopped now. We're going to go in as forcefully as we feel necessary and bring this to a close.
I understand there were two encampments in Cairo, a larger one and a smaller one. What had been going on in the weeks leading up to yesterday's crackdown?
Essentially, we saw those encampments, and that is correct. There was one larger, one smaller, plus then other encampments throughout the country and some of the major cities. And what we saw were those encampments turning into kind of protesters' villages. You had central kitchens, you had medical care, you had mosques, you had speeches. It was really turning into something that looked like it could carry on for quite some time, become semi-permanent even. And I think that's what was of concern to the general and the government, that if these camps took on any greater sense of permanence, it would be more difficult to dislodge them in the future. It would allow the protesters to gain maybe greater supporters amongst those who were sympathetic to the Muslim Brotherhood. So the longer they stayed, the more permanent they looked, and they were starting to look fairly permanent as it was.
Now, the Muslim Brotherhood said they were staging peaceful protests, but there were also reports of burning churches, killing police, firing assault rifles. Do we know how much of that was actually going on?
We don't, and I think it's going to be difficult to find out. It was fairly clear early on in the assault on the encampments that the government was also targeting journalists. We saw a cameraman from Sky TV in Britain killed, and based on his wound, it looked like it was a fairly intentional attack. There was another reporter killed, a couple others injured. And I think after that, then the government and the soldiers also prevented journalists from approaching where the camps were and where some of the violence was occurring. And I think clearly the Egyptian government wanted to control the message that was getting out. They wanted to control the media. They were certainly aware of how the media had covered the revolution that brought down Mubarak, and they didn't want to see that repeated. And so I think that, the government is very hesitant to allow all of the information to get out. Consequently, we're not going to know for quite some time, if ever, if the government accusations were correct. I think that we can probably expect that there were some more extreme and more violent forces within the opposition. But for the most part, it did seem to be a relatively peaceful protest, a relatively peaceful opposition group. But I don't doubt that there were some violent elements there. As for the attacks on the Christians, some of the Muslim Brotherhood still remember the Coptic Christian Pope standing on the stage with General Sisi and Mohammed el-Baradei and others. And so the Coptic Christians have always been kind of an easy target for the more radical Islamists in Egypt, and even those who aren't so radical. So I think that we can expect to see more of the sectarian violence occurring as well. One of the things we have to remember was that also on the stage with General Sisi when President Morsi was overthrown was the leader of Al-Azhar Mosque, who is one of the major Muslim leaders. And so the Muslim community, the vast majority of Egyptians, are not of a single mind there. And so there were a number of them opposed to the Muslim Brotherhood as well. And we can probably expect to see Muslim-on-Muslim violence intensify over the next few weeks.
So this really polarizes the Egyptian people, and it's not just the military against the Muslim Brotherhood or the Islamists. There's so many different variations there, different factions or whatever you want to call them going on here.
Right. There are a number of factions, and I would expect polarization to continue, that we're going to see the rise of additional factions. It was a group of strange bedfellows on that stage when President Morsi was overthrown. And there have to be some of those who supported the overthrow of President Morsi who are now second-guessing themselves. They have to wonder if really it was in their best interest to side with the military and overthrow the president. Because clearly democracy, if it isn't dead in Egypt for the foreseeable future, it is on life support. And I don't expect democracy to return anytime soon, which means then that factionalization is going to grow and we're going to see more extreme elements rising to the top and increased violence.
Now you mentioned the unified forces that were on the stage there. I believe Mohammed el-Baradei was one of them.
Yes.
And now he was the interim vice president, Nobel Prize winner, and he resigned.
Right. He looks like I'm trying to think of a diplomatic way to put it. He looks like a very short-sighted political opportunist who, to some extent, was in over his head and simply didn't know which way to turn. He has probably lost all credibility with all sides in Egypt at this point, because to a great extent he sold out the democratic process by siding with the military and overthrowing President Morsi. He should have known early on in the coup that what happened yesterday was inevitable, and he didn't have much choice when it came to resigning yesterday with the violence, because he simply couldn't stay with the military, essentially military junta with a kind of in civilian sheep's clothing, I guess. He couldn't stay beside them after what occurred yesterday. But now the opposition isn't going to trust him. The military isn't going to trust him. He is essentially politically persona non grata at this point.
Isn't he also sort of seen as by some in the opposition or some that are opposed to him as a tool of the West?
Right. And so because of his work with the UN, because of his ties to Westerners, he is going to be viewed suspiciously anyway. So he has not done his political career any good. He's probably looking for a retirement villa in Switzerland about now.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're discussing the recent events in Egypt with USD political science professor Tim Shorn. Now, with the crackdown on Morsi supporters and the Muslim Brotherhood, that essentially ends any sort of possibility that they would negotiate with the government.
Right. You're right. There will be no negotiations now. My concern is where the military goes from here. And I think it behooves us to remember that while there is a civilian president and there is a civilian prime minister and there are civilian members in the cabinet, the military is, for all intents and purposes, calling the shots here. And I think what we have to watch now is where the military goes. Are they going to essentially go on a hunting expedition? Are they going to be tracking down the mid-level leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood and either just killing them on the spot or jailing them? That it really looks to me that the military is going to try to eliminate the Muslim Brotherhood as a viable political force. They won't be successful in that. Many Egyptian presidents have tried that in the past, but I think that it's very possible that General Sisi and the military command are going to try to bring a close to the era of the Muslim Brotherhood. The $64,000 question then remains, what happens to President Morsi and those who are jailed with him? I think that because of their status, that they probably won't be executed, but they're certainly not going to be released anytime soon either.
How much of this is a return to the old order from the Mubarak days?
It is a return to the old order. One of the concerns when Mubarak was overthrown and President Morsi was elected was this notion of a deep state, the bureaucracy and the military being so entrenched with supporters of the old regime that only the facade had changed. And so we really see a return to the good old days of military dictatorship in Egypt, even if wearing civilian clothing, that we're going to see those old entrenched interests becoming greater, increasingly entrenched. So, it's almost as if, other than the fact that Mubarak is gone, that the last 2 to 3 years didn't occur. And so we're back to where we started.
Now, as far as the United States goes in what's happening in Egypt, this morning President Obama mentioned that he's canceling the U.S.-Egyptian military exercises that were scheduled for next month. No talk on canceling any military aid to Egypt. The United States is pretty much stuck on the sidelines here. There's really not much influence.
We are on the sidelines. We have very little influence, and we have to remember that if any military leader in Egypt was open to American influence, it was General Sisi. He had attended schools in the United States military schools. He had gone through kind of wargaming exercises with the United States. He was a known quantity. Well, clearly he's not being influenced by the United States. We didn't do a very good job of influencing President Morsi when he was in power. Various forces in Egypt look at us as either being too close to the Muslim Brotherhood and President Morsi or too close to the military, too opposed to democracy or too supportive of chaotic democracy. There's really nothing that we can do now. I think, though, that the government, that the Obama administration should have been better prepared and more aware that what happened yesterday was eventually going to happen. And I think that perhaps a little more overt and public pressure would have been appropriate immediately after the coup. But we were too busy discussing whether or not a coup had occurred. Well, I think it's clear now that what occurred was a coup, and they have no intention of turning the clock back, and no one's really interested in listening to the United States. As for the aid of the future probably depends on what the military does in the next few weeks to months. Do they let up a little bit, or do they continue applying pressure and force? If they continue applying the pressure and the force, and it looks like there are no real steps back toward democracy, then I would think that we have to reduce or eliminate the aid for the next fiscal year.
How much concern is there that this could turn into a civil war?
I think that there is probably a little bit of concern that while it might not be the type of civil war that has occurred in Syria, that what we could see are more limited attacks, if you will, carried out by the Muslim Brotherhood, a radicalization of some wing of the Muslim Brotherhood so that they start carrying out essentially terrorist attacks, attacks against primarily government buildings, government forces. Earlier today, four Egyptian soldiers were attacked and killed in the Sinai, and the Sinai has been a hotbed of anti-government activity even since before the coup and the election. So I think that we can probably expect to see more of that in the Sinai, more of that in southern Egypt, and eventually more and more of that in the major metropolitan areas in northern Egypt as well.
We talk about the Muslim Brotherhood, other Islamic groups.
There are. There is a Salafist party, Al-Nur, which is even more politically radical than the Muslim Brotherhood. Oddly enough, they supported the ousting of the Muslim Brotherhood and President Morsi at the time of the coup. So I'm not really sure what they're going to be up to. I have no doubts that they didn't do it because they thought that President Morsi wasn't democratic enough. They simply wanted to dislodge him and open more political space for the Salafist wing of Islam. But what they do in the future, I don't know. They have to know that at some point when the government is finished or fairly pleased with the success of their crackdown on the Muslim Brotherhood, that the government will have to turn towards the Salafists next because they tend to be the group who are most prone to violence. So they have to be wondering what the future holds for them. And I expect additional groups to spring up over the next few months as well.
What does the removal of Morsi, the bloody crackdown yesterday, what does this mean now for the legacy of the Arab Spring, that it's easier to overthrow a president, a leader, than to have peace and establish a new government?
Right. And that's the problem, is that when you have a revolution and you try to create a democratic regime, it's going to be very unstable for quite a while. You're going to have increased expectations on the part of the people in the immediate aftermath of the revolution. And when those expectations are met, they're going to turn elsewhere. We're going to see that. We have seen that in Libya. We're probably going to see more of that in Tunisia. So I think that the verdict has not yet been delivered on the Arab Spring, but we can expect more troubling times for those countries who did seem to have a revolution and are trying to move towards democracy. I think, though, for the time being, the Arab Spring is definitely over in Egypt.
Well, Tim, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.